Road live from Washington, D.C., as we've been yesterday and now today. We've had some great times up here. I think we've had some excellent interviews. We've been sharing, and I hope you have been enjoying what we're sharing up here. Yeah, I did want to go ahead and just give you an update on the weather here in Washington, D.C. I don't know how we scored such beautiful weather, but today it's going to be a high of 89, low of 71, partly sunny skies. And on Friday, we've got a high of 93, low of 74. And by the time the rain comes in on Saturday, guess what? We'll be back in Greenwood, South Carolina. What's your weather down there? Would you like to know? I have no idea, but I tell you what, I can tell you what the weather, what the weather's telling me that it is. So let's go ahead and we'll check that. In Greenwood right now, it is, oh, I guess it's about 69 degrees, looking for a high of 85 and a low tonight of 69 degrees again. What do we got? 10% chance of rain. High of 85, low of 69. Friday, however, there is an 80% chance of rain. High of 77, low of 69. Hey, but the good news is come Saturday, the rain is gone. 87 will be the high, low of 71. And, of course, a lot of 4th of July celebration, the Festival of Stars, will be having their big night. And, of course, Aaron Tippin is going to be the headliner at the Festival of Stars over there in 96. And, of course, they'll do the fireworks. They got a whole big plan going on over there. If I'm back, I'm actually supposed to have an interview with Aaron Tippin on Saturday morning on From Trash to Treasures along a country road. So haven't got the info, just need to push that button and say will do, and we'll be doing that on Saturday morning. Not only that, will that be going on Saturday. Of course, Saturday night is fireworks over the lake right there with Connect Lake Greenwood out there at, Camp Fellowship, there you go, is where it all takes place. I need to go ahead and turn in your, let them know that you're coming because they do have only limited parking. And then, of course, all the boats that can fit on the lake, well, that's no problem. So that's another great event going on. So it is the 4th of July weekend. We are here in Washington, D.C. We've got, at least it hasn't changed yet, Congressman Jeff Duncan is supposed to be here around 9:30. And we've got a guy that has worked with gangs and all this kind of stuff. We're going to be talking to him, hopefully going in about 8:45 this morning. So we've got a lot of other guests lined up. I'm supposed to be talking to Sheriff Hobson. He's the sheriff for, I think it's Bristol, Virginia, where it wasn't Mexicans that they had coming in. They had people from Portugal coming in there. So we've got interesting stuff. We've done interesting stuff. But, hey, you know what I got to do last night? It was awesome. Emerald and I got to have dinner with Michael Harrison, the publisher, editor of Talkers Magazine. We had him on yesterday morning. We got to have dinner with him after being at a little party for fair. I tell you what, the place was filled. There are 62 broadcasters from across this great land that were here for fair, and they're, of course, here today, and interviews will be going on. Got another news flash for you. Emerald and I just scored Michelle Malkin's book, Sold Out, How High-Tech Billionaires and Partisan Beltway Crap Weasels Are Screwing America's Best and Brightest Workers. That's kind of how she would say it, isn't it? Yes, yes. I love, you know, one of the topics I would have liked to have discussed with Michelle that I was thinking about after the interview, since she was an English major, got a degree in English, wouldn't it be, we use so little of the English language. And, you know, the thing that I think that's always so much fun about Michelle is she puts together these great words and makes it colorful. Well, we all should be able to do more of that. We should work harder on knowing our English language. Yeah, there you go. So, but we did get a copy of it, and feel very privileged to have gotten that. Yeah. So, anyways, that's some of the fun things that you happen when you work hard and put a message out there. So that's what we're doing here today. What else have I got to tell you? We've got more ranchers coming up this morning, So this is the schedule here, folks. And then, of course, tomorrow we are going to be over at the Library of Congress. Also, Emerald and I have to make a trip to the old post office. Now, the Trump Hotel, we've got to get over there, don't you think, and just say that we've been there. We're not staying there, folks, but we will drop by and just see the grandeur of it, right? There you go. So that's another fun thing we're going to do somewhere today. But right now, I think what we need to do is see if we can round up our guests there. The sheriffs and the ranchers, sometimes it's hard to corral them. So we're going to get out there and see what's going on. A lot of people are dragging a little bit this morning because of the party last night. So we're here, we're moving, and we're doing good. And I sure hope that you will check out our Facebook page, wcrs.amradio, and see all the stuff we've posted there. Emerald's also been posting some interesting content on this thing called Snapchat. If you're on Snapchat, you can check it out. All right, I'm Ann Eller. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't you go away.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right, we're back here. That's right. We are shuffling guests. Everybody seems to have made a few mistakes on what time their appointment was. So we are shuffling guests right now. So you're just going to have to hang loose with us and see who we talk to. But I tell you what, yesterday I did tell you we went to the Library of Congress, fabulous place, you got to go there. We had an excellent interview with Dan Stein, the president of FAIR. You know, these are the type of things that I just think I am so blessed to be able to be here and be getting the information and bringing it back to you. Just watched Mike Lee right here at FAIR. I guess I could have tried to snag him, but... You know, the guys get up there and they think that they are the ones that should be doing all the questioning. And they really get intimidated. I can't speak too loud because there's a lot of guys around here at this radio row. And they think they know how all the questions and everything. But you know me. I'm going to get my opportunity. But I did get to see Mike Lee. And I don't know, if you watch Fox, you probably have seen Mike Lee. One of the things that impressed me, he's much shorter than what you would have thought. sitting at Fox, you know, at the table, you don't really know how tall he is, but he's pretty short. Anyway, the thing that gets me, and I'm going to go off on healthcare, the thing that gets me is that here he sits saying, somebody asked him, well, why don't you just repeal healthcare? Well, we should. Why are we, you know, watering it down, changing it around, doing all this kind of stuff? Why don't you repeal it and then present your own bill? And you know what he said? We should. I guess the question is, why don't they? What is wrong with doing what is right for the American people? You have all seven, you have all the parts of Congress, the Senate, the executive. Why don't you do this? This is my question. So I don't understand it, and I don't think he understands it, but he said, well, we should. But then there is no action. There is no will to do what is right and what is the people's business. I am beginning to think that having as much as I wouldn't want to see government grow would be to have a larger pool so that the people would have to be more responsible, our Congress people would have to be more more responsive to the group of people. Well, anyways, these are the things that trouble us when we look at all these different things. I do think that if they're going to try to have Friday available, if they're going to have all this done by Friday, I don't know, we're not going to get the bill we should get. And that is the problem. So if you're like me and tired of all this, call your senators, Lindsey Graham, Tim Scott, give them a call, let them know how you feel. But there is no way they're going to get the bill that the people are looking for if they just push it through for Friday. It kind of reeks of the Democratic way of doing things, doesn't it? We have to pass the bill in order to find out what's in it. That's kind of what we're doing here. And with the number of people that have already said they're not in, there were 9. I don't know if any more have signed on, but there were 9. Where does that really take us? I don't know. Anyways, that's a subject coming up at 9:30. We are going to have Congressman Jeff Duncan with us. And Jeff is been putting a couple of things out there. I'm sure he'll want to talk about those. So we'll see if we can get Jeff to talk about it. He was on Fox Business or something. And guess what? They will, June 28th, guess who may be taking the lead on health care? This is good news. He was on, I can't remember where, he was on Fox Business, and they were talking about a new something that he is promoting. So we'll see where all this goes. We'll see what happens. Anyways, I'm waking up. I've had my coffee. I'm looking forward to talking to some people. I need some people over here to talk to. So, hey, Andy, how about let's play a song? I need a break. I got to see what Emerald's working on. She's fast and furious, and she keeps trying to show me these pieces of paper and let me talk, and I can't do both at once. Maybe I could chew gum and talk, but then you wouldn't enjoy it. Hey, I'll be right back. Don't you go away. We are on. Yes, I'm Ann Eller, and I am here with one of our guests. We are not having to tap dance anymore. Richard Valdemar, he is retired from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department in 2004. For most of his 33 years, he was involved in combating gangs. For the last 20 years, he was assigned to the Detective Division Major Crimes Bureau. And Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
What are you doing now?
Well, after I retired, I couldn't leave it alone, so I joined the Arizona Gang Task Force. Actually, my captain retired to the city that I retired in, and he got me involved in the local police, so I'm a reserve with the Get'em gang unit.
And what does Get'em stand for?
Gang Intelligence and Immigration Enforcement.
So you're putting the gangs and immigration together.
Absolutely. We can do that in Arizona because it's a free state.
It's a free state?
Yes. Unlike California, where I came from.
Oh, so in California, what would happen?
Like LAPD has the, I think it's called Special Order Number 40, where they're not allowed to even ask the immigration status. We have all kinds of special, you can't tow away their cars when they're involved in accidents. You can't. They have special staff. I call it a government-protected criminal class.
Wow. So, as an American, they would tow my car away.
That's right.
Okay. But as a gang member and an illegal immigrant, they would not.
Right. My son, who is a police officer, was involved in a traffic accident, and the woman who was driving the other vehicle was in a van. First of all her kids were in the van, and they weren't seat-belted. The van wasn't actually rented to her. She was not the one who rented the van, and she was at fault. The police came, and they wound up, letting her go. So my son was livid.
Right.
But that was, the officer explained to him, I'm sorry, that this is what the rules are.
Wow. So, and where do you live in Arizona?
I live in Bullhead City, Arizona. We're right across the river from Laughlin, Nevada, right up the street from Needles, California. And I got to say, this is the first time in my experience that we have such cooperation from the three jurisdictions.
Do you think that is because of the change in the administration?
No, I think we're cooperating because, frankly, we don't have enough cops.
Don't have enough cops, okay.
So we tend to cooperate.
You know, that is one of the problems that we're seeing. I mean, I can remember reading, I don't know whether it was Pennsylvania or somewhere, where the sheriff told them, hey, arm yourself. We can't cover you.
Yes,
we can't get there. That's a sad state of affairs.
Arizona, just about everybody can carry, unless you're a convicted felon or prohibited possessor. So it's a friendly place.
Wait a minute. It's a friendly place because everybody's carrying?
That's right. You tend to be polite to a person who's armed.
We believe in the same thing in South Carolina.
Good for you.
That's right. There's even this thing about, open carry. That
yes.
It has not passed, but it was a subject of discussion in South Carolina.
Yes, when my relatives and friends come visit me and we go into the Walmart, sometimes they get shocked because people are walking around in open carry with a gun on their side. But there's never any problems. And as a police officer, when we make traffic stops, we assume that the person is going to be armed, and it makes your traffic stop a lot safer. You do the same thing every time.
Because you don't want anything bad to happen.
And we want to give the person the opportunity to tell you, hey, I'm armed.
Right. That's one of the first things you're supposed to tell them,
right?
That you are armed and where the gun is. Now, as far as your job, we were talking last night at the party, and you actually were telling me, though, that the administration, you feel, has made a difference, particularly on the border with the Border Patrol.
Yes. I lecture law enforcement classes all over the United States. In fact, in Canada. I was in Canada in 9/11. When it occurred, I got stuck there because they closed the border. But during my classes, I often talk about the immigration problem in Los Angeles, which nobody else talks about. And at that time, under the other administration, the border patrolmen were so restricted they couldn't complain or go public with any kind of complaint about the administration of the immigration laws because of the federal hierarchy. So that there'd be serious retaliation if they spoke about it. So I would speak about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they would begin to leak information to me and provide me with a subject matter so I could give these lectures. And they were so happy that I began to get belt buckles and hats from the Border Patrol. And I even designed the unofficial logo for the Yuma Border Patrolman.
Okay. So problem with the gangs and the immigration, what exactly do you try to do with Get 'Em?
With Get 'Em, it's a gang unit. They investigate and, do gang prevention and patrol in the area that I work in, the jurisdiction, trying to see the gang members. And we have also a lot of outlaw motorcycle groups. So we police them as well. And then the difference between a gang unit and like a gang sweep that you see on TV, gang sweeps are not effective.
Okay.
It's like a Band-Aid. It's what politicians show on TV at 5 o'clock so that people can think that they're doing something.
Right.
But during the sweeps, if you ask the detectives how many filings occurred from the sweep, you might arrest 200 people and confiscate 300 guns, but you get no filings on Monday morning. So the gang unit actually arrests people and makes sure that there's an investigation and a filing, and that is effective because you actually take the gang member off the street.
Now what happens to them after you take them off the street?
They go to prison.
They go to prison?
Yes, and America has this love affair with the motorcycle gang. Well, motorcycle gangs hold no position in prison. They fall under even white punk gangs and peckerheads, and there's different names of Featherwoods and so
peckerheads. I got an image in my mind on that one. Okay.
Peckerwoods. Peckerwoods, peckerheads, and other white groups. They are what they call shot callers in the prison system, all under the Aryan Brotherhood, and the Aryan Brotherhood is the prison gang that controls all these gangs, in white gangs. For instance, in a Mexican, if you're a Mexican gang member, whether you're a 18th Street or Mar Salvatrucha, if you went to prison, what you do would be dictated by the Mexican mafia. That's the prison gang that controls that. If you're a Crip or a Blood, what you do in prison would be dictated by the Black Guerrilla family. So your enemy's on the street, but your friend's in prison because of your race.
Now, the gang thing is getting bigger and bigger in the
Absolutely.
United States.
Yes,
and why is that?
Well, for one thing, America has this love affair, romance I mentioned, with about motorcycle gangs, but also against anti-heroes. So our heroes tend to be gang members, and the music glorifies them. So you have young people now who live in the suburbs who've never been in a ghetto in their life who act like and talk like and admire, the crew from Straight Outta Compton. And I grew up in Compton. Believe
right.
me, they were nothing when I was living there.
I think one of the things that they say is that a lot of kids are alone, don't have any support from their family, and so the gang structure provides them that.
Yeah, it's a shame. Almost half the kids born are born out of wedlock, and the best thing you can do to prevent gang problems in your family is to have dinner together every day. That sounds odd, but that's what social scientists have found out over the years. So a lot of the gang prevention programs are actually federally funded ripoffs. So we have...
You mean we're wasting our money again?
Absolutely. and because they put psychologists or ex-gang members in charge of a program.
Ex-gang members?
So it doesn't work very well. So we have many programs even sponsored and run by the prison gangs or the major gangs. And so
are they actually recruiting well there?
No.
No?
Look at how well it works in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
And actual gang programs that work, we have a program in Los Angeles called GRIP, gang reduction is paramount, and it's from the city of Paramount, a man named Tony Ostos, who's an educator. He's not he's never been a gang member.
Right.
He's not a law enforcement officer, but he studied it. So what he does is he takes the kids in the fourth grade and inoculates them by telling them, this is what the results of gang membership is going to do. You can get that tattoo, but then you exclude yourself from other friends because that tattoo identifies you as with this group.
It's kind of like Scared Straight when they take kids to morgues and this type of thing.
No, it's
no?
They use puppets and puppet coloring books and things like that to do it. Then they follow up in the sixth grade with a second part of the program. Well, that program is the most successful, and I used to try to sell it to L.A. City schools and get them to go aboard, but they have this not invented here, and rather they would rather hire some ex-gang member to come in and speak to the kids. Now, that's like Scared Straight.
Okay.
Okay.
Does it work, though?
No, it doesn't. Because despite what they say, they admire that person. After all, how did he have that forum? Why does he have that forum?
Because he's an
ex-gang. Because he's a gang member. Right. And then
do you think somebody actually leaves a gang? I mean, do people actually leave gangs?
I've helped many gang members leave their gangs. But it's a cultural change. And by that, I don't mean that gangs are a part of anybody's culture. What I mean is there's a criminal culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go to prison, everybody speaks the same language. It's a criminal code, a jargon that all cons know. They have different words for things, and that's the language that all races speak while in jail. So you're being indoctrinated in this jail look and this jail culture and this jail speech. And when you come out, you're a gang member. Well, they have to leave that culture. So it's not a geographical move. They can't move to South Carolina and leave the gang because it's in their culture. But they can go to college and leave the gang.
So they have to change their whole mental. It's more mental than anything else.
That's right.
So as far as growth of gangs, we talk about the gangs, and even in South Carolina, we're having more gang activity, and more of it seems to be coming to our state. Are we getting a handle on it, and is it coming out of Mexico, or is it now just spreading just like a disease?
Yes, that's a big issue, subject to try to take on. This is what I say. Gangs are not the same. You have East Coast gangs that influence you on the East Coast. You have West Coast gangs that influence us on the West Coast. Chicago gangs are much like East Coast gangs because they were settled by East Coast gangs. So they have a structure that's a pyramid structure, a corporate structure. They have a president, a vice president.
Corporate structure,
right.
Okay.
But not in Los Angeles. The gangs in Los Angeles are a coalition of cliques with charismatic leaders in small cells. So when you apply a gang program and try to eliminate a gang, it works well in Chicago, or it might work well in New York. It doesn't work against Los Angeles-based gangs. So on the East Coast, they're shocked that they can't affect Mar Salvatrucha. Mar Salvatrucha is a cell-like structure that comes from its imitation of the Los Angeles gang, more like a terrorist cell. Right, a terrorist group is made up of different cells, and you can't kill off Osama bin Laden, and that's the end of the problem. No, you have to attack the whole cell one at a time and eliminate them. So that's the same thing with West Coast gangs. And no, we had some very effective programs in the 80s and 90s. I was part of Operation Safe Streets, which was the most effective gang program, police gang program in the nation at the time. But then politics got involved, right? And the politicians start breaking up what the policemen are trying to do because it offends the community. Well, it's not the whole community. They only offend the vocal minority that supports the gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because, I grew up in Compton. It was primarily a black neighborhood. I was happy when the police put down some of the crime in my community.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's not them that speak. You're going to hear from the ACLU. You're going to hear from the Nation of Islam. You're going to hear from, Muslim clerics and even Catholic priests. One of my chief rivals, I'm a strong Catholic, but one of the chief rivals in Los Angeles was Father Greg Boyle, who believes there's no such thing as a bad boy, and we're going to make them all good guys. We're going to give them jobs. And he says jobs, not bullets. Very, very naive. I mean, I'm sure he's well-intentioned, but he's an idiot. He doesn't understand gangs at all. Okay.
Well, what about the state of our policing? Back in the day, if you were bad, you got in trouble.
That's right. Even the gang members knew that.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
You took them to jail, they said, "Oh, yeah, this is part of my job. Right? I got to go to jail because they do bad things."
Right. Now it's just like we don't believe that anything bad is going to happen, and
right. And we
put people back out on the streets. We've got overcrowded prisons. We don't send illegals back.
No. That's politics involved in police work. That whenever that happens, that's bad. Any chief of police or sheriff who refuses to enforce the immigration laws, who is part of a sanctuary city, has violated his oath. He should be removed. You know, ethical and moral men do not pick and choose which laws they're going to enforce and which they're going to obey. You know, that's immoral and a violation of the oath that they took. So they should be removed. But that's the state we're in now, where the sheriffs are coming out publicly saying they're not going to help immigration. And, you know, they say, well, because it's a federal problem, federal immigration, and it should be handled under the federal budget. Well, they have no objection to arresting a bank robber or a federal fugitive, and they house them in their jails. They don't make an issue of that. They only make an issue because it's politically incorrect to enforce the immigration laws.
Well, what about sanctuary cities? Are they ever going to be removed? Are we going to have equal laws around our country, because the biggest thing that I've heard is these sanctuary cities saying you can't do that and you can't cut off the money.
Yeah, they say that. That's why we're here, right? Hold their feet to the fire.
Yes.
Okay, and if you're going to spend my money protecting a criminal class, I'm going to withdraw my money.
Right.
I'm not going to vote for you anymore. And that's what needs to happen. The people need to speak and act, vote, and that's the way it's going to change. Otherwise, it's going to continue.
Well, that's like repealing Obamacare, though. They were supposed to repeal Obamacare, and all they're really doing is introducing a bill, but they're never actually repealing it. In fact, I saw Mike Lee was being questioned out there. How come we're not repealing Obamacare? That's what you guys said you would do. And he goes, I agree, but, there's no answer. The but is, but we're not.
Too much money. Well, I blame Obamacare, on Obama, of course, but actually, I think the health insurance industry is to blame for that, because we got it because they were abusing us. They're extorting us.
Right, exactly.
And so we got Obamacare, and unfortunately, now they're pouring their money into the lobbyists to try to prevent it from being taken away from the one they've established under Obama.
Well, except that, don't you think the problem is that we're losing insurance companies because they can't afford to be part of it?
Well, you're making a lot of money. Suddenly they tell you, you're not going to make half that much money. Oh, no, I can't do it anymore.
Makes sense, yeah.
I was a member of Kaiser, and I remember I had a friend that was in Kaiser billing. And at the time they were saying Kaiser Permanente was going to go broke. And she told me, that's crazy. They're making millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
Don't be fooled.
Yes.
Anyway, but how that affects us in immigration, this is what I talk about, the danger for the United States is that drug and human traffickers finance gangs. So,
well, they need the gang members here in the States, don't they, for distribution.
Enforcement and distribution, right, exactly. So when we wink or turn our head, we're doing what Mexico did, right? The mordida, the bribe. It's not just accepting money to break the law. It's also looking the other way, and that's part of corruption. And that's the biggest danger they present to us, is they're corrupting our system, and no one's doing anything about it. They make $100 billion a year in human and narcotics trafficking on the border. 60%.
Who makes 100?
The cartel.
Okay.
Anyway, they use 60% of their money as bribes.
To who?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
To who?
So who's that money going? Well, it's not going to Mexico anymore. I own Mexico.
Okay.
So it's going to our people. And there's a paper, you can find it on the Internet, called Silver Over the Border. And it's a few years old, but it just shows you the way it works. How many of our law enforcement and public officials that have been corrupted by the cartel money. And they're not low-level people. These are people high up in offices of, you know, the Border Patrol or Homeland Security, and that have been corrupted by this drug money.
And what's happening about it? So this was pointed out, and what happened?
They get convicted, and these are all people that have been convicted.
Okay.
But what we're convicting, first of all, we don't know half of the people that are receiving money, and then the ones we find, we're not convicting. We don't have enough evidence to convict all of them, but it's the systematic corruption of the system. If you can't trust the police, you can't trust the judges, if you can't trust the government, what do you have? You have Mexico.
You have Mexico?
This is WCRS Greenwood, on the web at WCRS1450AM.net.
Timeless Cool. Valdemar. Let's get back to our point. We're going to keep talking here for a few minutes. So we can't trust these. They're being bribed. Is there a way to bring down the system, though, Richard? I mean,
Yes. We
identify it, we talk about it, but nothing else seems much to happen. Of course, that's why Radio Row is here, to try to get people knowing what's going on. But can something be done about it, and is there the will to do something about it? Because, yes, something can be done about it, but is there the will to do something about it?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. We don't have the will. You know, all these young kids try to identify with the 60s civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'd wimp out if they really actually had to go through it, you know.
I think you're probably right, yes.
So they're trying to live in the past. Why? Because their professors in college told them that that was the most significant event of that era. That's not the problem now. So they need to get behind corruption, you know, trying to correct in local politics, electing people who are ethical, who keep the law. You know, that's what needs to be done. In fact, the most effective program against the cartels in Mexico is these little pueblos, these little ranchos, have self-protected. They've decided they'll arm themselves against the federal law of Mexico and push out their chief of police and arrest their mayor and hold their city against the cartel. And there's a war down there right now of these little cities protecting themselves. But it has to be local.
But can they protect themselves against the cartel?
They're doing it.
They're doing it?
Yes.
I thought the cartels were all-powerful, omnipotent.
Well, they are. If any of these little cities got big enough, probably the cartel would expend all
its... Oh, but they're just saying they're not important.
Yeah, you know...
They're a nuisance.
Yeah, we lost that little city. We lost this little city. But we have the federal government or whatever. And there's a lot of good cops in Mexico. I don't mean to say that all cops are corrupt. You know, it's very difficult to not be corrupted. But there are many ethical and good police officers. I try to help them, you know, when they come here to train. And, you know, you can tell there are many who've given their lives. There's many who continue to give their lives, as well as many journalists. You know, in Mexico, journalists are being killed because they're telling the truth. Look at our media. Our media.
We could send some down to Mexico and see what they come back with.
Exactly. In fact, all over the world, journalists are being killed for trying to get the truth. Not in the United States.
That's an interesting point of view here.
Yeah. So, you know, we do have a way. And the
but
way
what
is
about
locally,
here in America?
Locally, we do the same thing. We make our city clean. We hold our positions and the Constitution in our small cities and jurisdictions. That's why the sheriffs are so effective, right?
Because
local politics. Who knows better how to police my neighborhood? The sheriff. Right?
Right.
So we take care of him, and we help him, and we put the good man in office. And little by little, you know, we're going to take back the country.
Well, it sounds like a grassroots movement, which is a good thing, but it could take a long, long time. And do you think our country has a long, long time? It looks to me like the power of the gangs is overpowering. And even if you have this little area here and this little area here, it would almost seem like, yes, we need those local governments, but we need the support of the federal government to really make a difference.
I would caution against the support of the federal government.
Okay.
Because that every time they get involved in something, it seems to go bad. You know, when we control things statewide or locally, it seems to work. And then the federal government comes in to help us, and then we have problems. Because they see things from the big picture, and they don't see the small jurisdictions fight.
Right.
They don't understand the battle that's going on in your city. So they just blanket you with the regulations. I know this because I grew up in Compton, as I mentioned. After the 65 riots, we had model cities come in and teach us how to govern our city. Well, model cities people came from Chicago.
Okay.
So what did we learn? We learned how to be corrupt. Okay. All our mayors, or most of our mayors, after that time, wound up in prison.
Wow.
So there's the federal government came to help us.
Yes.
And look what happened.
Yeah.
And Compton to this day has that reputation. So, you know, and we have to have some federal law, and I agree with that. And I'd like enforcing, like immigration, that's a specific one, given to the federal government by the Constitution, protect our citizens, right?
Right.
They're not doing their job. Instead, they're going to get into your business.
Right. Yes, exactly.
And tell you who you can sell a cake to and that type of thing. That's wrong.
It absolutely is wrong. So from your perspective, you believe, okay, but how do we keep it? Okay, let's say South Carolina becomes clean, and we have our own issues over there, which we won't get into here. But anyways, let's say that South Carolina was able to control it. How do you keep them from coming into your state, into your border? Because we don't... Well, we have in the past brought drugs in from the East Coast, but we don't. Most of our drugs are now coming Mexico and that way in.
Yes.
Yeah. How are we able to stop them?
Well, first of all, they're American gangs. I call it the unholy trinity. This is the problem. There's a coalition. The coalition exists today. It is American street gangs with Mexican cartels, and the Mexican cartels have an alliance with jihadists. Muslims.
Oh, we haven't even talked about that.
Yes.
Yes.
And where's the number one recruiting place in the United States for Muslim extremists?
Know.
American prisons.
Wow.
That's the number one spot. So, but the kids on the lowest level,
yes,
they're not gang members. They're not born gang members. In fact, I interview thousands of kids. I always ask them this question. Before you were a gangster, what did you want to be? Guess what the number one answer is?
What?
Policeman.
Number
one. For
real?
Yes. Second one would be like coach or teacher.
Yeah, I was going to say basketball
officer.
Or football player.
Okay.
Yeah.
So these are the things. All of them good, wholesome,
right.
Ambitions. Somewhere along the line, when they turn about 12 years old, they switch over to their peer admiration of gang members. So up until, like, they're 12, when I drive down the street, they wave at me and say, hey, Mr. Policeman.
Right.
And then after that, they're giving me the middle finger.
You know, I heard an interesting interview with Ben Carson. He's now the head of HUD. And he said they go into areas, and he says he loves to talk to the kids. And he asks the kids, what do they want to be when they grow up? And he goes, it's really sad because in our country, there's only about 8 or 9 different careers that would be the thing that they would want to be. And he goes, these kids have no idea that there's thousands of things they could be. And, you know, that goes to that same point.
So we need to stop their recruiting of our people. And that the way we do that is we need to start these programs for kids and the grammar school level. Junior high school and high school is too late and too little. So we got to do that. And the other thing is we have to start attacking, using the RICO statutes, the cartels and the large gangs. And we do that because of this reason. Under the RICO statute, you can charge the people who are in Mexico or the people who are in another state or people who are in prison with the crimes committed by their followers. Okay, that works
right.
against. That
Plus,
works
you
against,
can take all their goods
and yeah, seize yeah, all, the, all their assets
right.
and use that money to help fight
right.
this thing. So on both ends, we're drying up the recruitment and we're cutting off the head of the snake. That's the way we do it. And we tighten our border, southern border and northern border.
Do you think the people have the will, though? This is what I keep hearing, that our people, our everyday citizens don't have the will. It's like getting rid of drugs. Could we get rid of the drug problem? If the people wanted to get rid of the drug problem, we would be rid of the drug problem.
And that's what the cartel members, I've interviewed cartel members, and they say, hey, the drug problem is not our problem. It's your problem. They said, you know, we don't take the drugs, you do. In fact, California or the United States in general, who's the largest consumer of drugs in the world? We are. Who's the largest consumer of pornography? We are.
Oh, come on. We've got all the vices here.
Yes. And I say that not because I want to criticize Americans. I say that's the symptom of something wrong with us. I don't know if we're bored, if we're spoiled. There's something that we're trying to satisfy through the use of drugs and sex and this type of thing. And when you talk to the little kids, and I said, I have a lot of friends that are, I don't have a college education, but I have many friends who have PhDs, and they work in this field, and they're still my friends, you know.
I caught that. Okay.
I don't hold them again. Anyway, we sat down one day, and we say, why do you think these kids are all joining gangs, especially from suburban and actually some well-to-do families have gang members in their family? I said, why? And then one of them, Gus Frias, I think, was the one who said it. And he said, you know, Rich, they're spoiled. Even in the poverty neighborhoods, the poorest, where you can't get food and you can't get an education, they're wearing $100 shoes. They're carrying a cell phone. They have expendable money to buy drugs. They have certain clothes that they wear that are very expensive. Who buys them those clothes?
I kind of agree with that. Our whole value system is upside down.
Yes.
Yes. And so I guess we'll have to leave it there, though. That could be a subject for a whole nother conversation,
yes.
Rich. Listen, you've been a great interview today. We've been talking with Richard Valdemar. Valdemar.
Yes.
What is the background of Valdemar?
Valdemar is actually a Danish word, but some of them moved to France. We get the facts in the case of M. Valdemar from Edgar Allan Poe. And then the French invaded Mexico, so my grandfather was a mercenary, probably from France.
From France,
yes.
So your background is actually Hispanic.
Yes, Mexican.
Yes.
Both sides of my family fought for Pancho Villa and then migrated to the United States as miners because Arizona needed hard rock miners.
Very interesting story. You've been a great guest. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I hope we can give you a call and maybe have you on down there in South Carolina.
I'd like to thank you for your work because you guys here on Radio Row are putting out the information that you're not going to get from MSNBC or CNN.
There you go. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
We're right back here at Fair. We're broadcasting from the beautiful Phoenix Park Hotel right across from the Union Station. Really is a great location. I think it's 3, maybe 4 blocks to Congress over there. And I tell you what, though, when we talk blocks, we're talking different size blocks than what we have in South Carolina. These are big blocks. Okay. Anyways, we have Fred and Peggy Davis. They are another group of ranchers that are going to be here in just a few minutes. We'll be talking with them. But I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Richard Valdemar. He is was part of the California Gang Task Force. He's still active, even though he's slowing down a little bit. But these are real issues, and of course, the fact that our sheriffs are important, and that's why it is important to get the right person elected. Of course, we have a new sheriff, Dennis Kelly, down there, Sheriff Dennis Kelly, and he's making his mark, and I think we're very, very fortunate to have Police Chief Gerald Brooks as part of our team here. I tell you what, I having worked with the police on several different things and everything, they are always courteous, and they always are there to serve, and so I think there in Greenwood we are very fortunate. As with anything, there are always issues and always things going on, but South Carolina is being proactive. Are we proactive enough? Well, I don't think so. The immigration issue is the issue that causes the problem. So can we make a difference? That's what this Radio Row is all about, is making a difference so that you can be informed. It's really, really hard when you're trying to get the right information out there, and there's so much, well, you know what our president says. There's so much fake news out there. It really makes it difficult to know what is the truth. I mean, I keep seeing stuff on the internet, and then I have to ask Emerald, is this really true? And then somehow she Googles it and she goes, yes, Ann, it's true, or no, Ann, that's fake news. But it's difficult to know what is the truth. Hey, I tell you what, I need to take like a minute break here while we get Fred and Peggy Davis all ready to talk with us. They are ranchers. We talked to them last year, and we want an update as to what's happening this year. So don't you go away.
Hi, this is Rob Gilchrist, voice of the Emerald Vikings, and I want to tell you about Romac Trophies and Signs. Romac Trophies and Signs maintains specialized service and offers their customers personalized and customized attention. Are you looking for a special way to reward your employees or team? Try a trophy, acrylic award, plaque, or medal. Romac Trophies and Signs adds your company or organization's logo and engrave your award to make it more personal. Visit their huge showroom in the Hampton Place Shopping Center and let Romac Trophies and Signs help you select the perfect gift for retirement or employee recognition. Are you coaching a team and want to recognize your players? Romac Trophies and Signs custom builds trophies on site to fit your budget and your individual needs. Romac is a proud sponsor of WCRS and sponsors the Player of the Week for Emerald Viking football. That's Romac Trophies and Signs at the Hampton Place Shopping Center in Greenwood. Call them today at 864-229-9277.
We are here, and we just had to get our new guests. I tell you what, we've got two in the hot seat now, and I've got Fred and Peggy Davis. They are cattle ranchers from, I'm not even going to say where they're from, I'm just going to say the word, Tombstone. That's right. So, Fred, how you doing today?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Have you been having a good time telling the people what everything's like down there?
Absolutely.
Well, what can you tell us how things are? Are they better than they were?
Absolutely. We're pretty excited about, for example, the morale of the Border Patrol from the Joint Field Commander down to the agents on the ground. People know that they can now enforce the law the way it's written. They don't have to stand and look the other way as illegals walk by. You know, Jeff Sessions said on Fox, gave a warning to the illegals, when you cross the border, you will be prosecuted. Their U.S. attorneys in Tucson are doing about 75 people a day, and apprehensions are down almost 70% this year. It's really encouraging.
It is encouraging, but how about as far as the drugs coming across the border?
They're down some, not. The cartel doesn't scare as easily as people.
Right.
Walking across.
Okay.
Right. They're not down significantly, but we'll take what we can get right now. You know, it's a work in progress.
Now, how is that affecting your ranch? How does it affect your ranch?
Well, for example, last fall, we're 25 miles north of the border. Border Patrol was chasing a truck that drove out of Mexico with 2,800 pounds of marijuana in the back. They saw, they were trying to stop him on the highway that runs through the ranch, and he drove through the highway fence, drove across country 8 miles on our ranch, finally dropped both front wheels in a steep ditch, and the Border Patrol caught three of the four. There was an, they assaulted one of the agents, broke his finger trying to take his gun away from him. I mean, we still have problems, mm-hmm. but they're less than they used to be.
Now, one of the things that I've heard that when they come across, if they get caught with the drugs, they just drop the drugs and then say, well, those drugs aren't mine.
Exactly. But when they have a vehicle full of them, that's the backpackers do that. And the agents have to take pictures. They make them take their shirts off and they show the marks on their shoulders. Yes, these guys were packing drugs. But they're fairly skilled at a lot of things.
Right. And, you know, we just had a guy, Richard Valdemar, who actually is working with gangs and this type of thing. And he was saying that the, part of the biggest problem is the cartels are bribing our U.S. officials.
Oh, it's been going on since the border,
since the border.
Came in existence.
Bribery is the second nature to them.
There was,
you know,
a friend of ours who does video for the NRA, and she interviewed a cartel member in Laredo. And he said, you know, we can hire any Border Patrol supervisor we want for $30,000 a month.
Wow.
And that really hit home with me. I'll never forget that quote.
So what do you think about the makeup of the Border Patrol? I understand we still have some holdovers, shall we say, from the President Obama's watch, and they are not 100%, what let's call them, they're not 100%ers. And then we have those that were good Border Patrol people that are just thankful that we now have somebody, President Trump, mm-hmm. who will be pushing the laws. What do you think about that, Peggy?
I really think we really need to get rid of all the Obama holdovers, move them out of there. Of course, I have no clout. No.
Well, you've got a voice right now.
I've got a voice, but I really wish they would just replace them all because, you know, those holdovers are still loyal to the past administration. You know, we've become very close with some of the people who really wanted to see a change and are, you know, thrilled that there is a change. And last fall, I testified in front of Congress. I was asked by Congresswoman Martha McSally, who chairs the Subcommittee on Border and Maritime Security.
She's from your area.
She's our,
right.
She's
right.
Our representative.
Right.
And she asked me to come and testify in my experience over the years about the failed policy of defense in depth along the border. And it's a crazy idea that you would put the majority of the agents north of me, which I'm 25 miles north of the border, and when I'm the first line of defense for the rest of you, and, you know, I appreciate my contribution, but that's a, you know, a little much to ask.
Are they down on the border now?
No.
Because that's been one of the questions about how far in they were, right?
There might be a few more, but they are still, the majority of them are still north of us, and I don't understand it. Because that day in the hearing, you get questions from the Democrats as well, and nobody seemed to be in favor of that, not the Democrats, not anybody, but yet that hasn't changed, and I don't understand that.
So an illegal can actually get 25 miles into the country?
Oh,
before anybody is even going to say
now,
hello.
Does that make sense that you catch them on the border before they get 25 miles in and have a chance to spread out? And pretty soon they're at Interstate 10 and they're in Maryland before we know it.
The Border Patrol consistently would tell us a football analogy. We've got to have a great backfield, and we would consistently tell them,
hello?
Yeah, but you have nobody on the line of scrimmage.
And you use your football analogy.
Yeah, well, they were using them yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to have people on the line. You know, the president talks about his wall, fence, whatever we do, we have to have people watching it, or it's has no value whatsoever.
Do you have a fence?
In places, yes.
In places?
Cochise County mostly has a fence, although the BLM doesn't let them put a fence on their land.
What's the BLM?
The
Bureau of Land Management.
Wait a minute. That's land owned by the government?
Yes. And they can't put a fence there.
Why not?
They don't want it because it might...
come on.
Because I said so.
So we want to just be able to keep the lines blurred between Mexico and the land management? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, is that an enigma? They will condemn private property.
To put a fence up.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But another government agency won't allow it, so they just walk away.
So they put the sign up that says, do not enter drug smuggling area. Please be careful on our own federal land.
Right, yes. I've heard of this, that you as an individual should not go into that area for fear of being
attacked.
Exactly.
They posted, don't go here, it's your property, but don't you go here.
Can you believe our government puts those signs up in America?
No, I can't. So does President Trump know about these?
I don't know.
I'm just saying, you know,
that would be a
very interesting question
somebody
for somebody
there,
in the media needs to ask him.
Somebody
that question.
Out there,
exactly.
Tell him, would you please? Yeah.
I've heard about that, and I think in your area and into Texas and stuff, there are signs. And isn't there an area, maybe even Texas, or maybe it's your area, where it's totally unsafe for people to be on the road?
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly.
I mean, and they put big billboards.
Yes.
Travel this area at your peril.
At your own risk. And in Texas, they even have signs in Chinese.
To benefit the illegals. They have water stations set up by the government.
Yeah.
Panic buttons. If you're in trouble, push this button and we will
illegal?
Come pick you. Yes.
Yeah. As an illegal. Not for an American.
In,
not for
citizen.
Me.
No. It's in Spanish and Chinese. We've... A good friend who had 10 Chinese walk in his yard 30 miles north of the border and demand a ride to Phoenix.
Right. Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It is. And that's the issue with the international boundary that a lot of people don't understand. It's not just Mexicans and Central Americans coming. It is lots of other countries. My neighbor found a Quran in a backpack. Another close friend found a prayer rug on his land. There's a lot of Middle Easterners coming. And what are they bringing?
What people need to understand, your listeners, I would say, is that it's a national security issue.
Right.
The people coming for a better life, that's what you hear all the time, they're just coming, are already here.
Right.
And right now, what's coming across the border, and Donald Trump wasn't wrong, Mexico is not sending us their best. The word is sending.
Right.
The ones they are sending are not good people. And so there are a lot of them from other countries coming through Mexico into our border. And, you know, people just really need to understand that this is your nation, and this is about your national security.
Well, in a few minutes, we are going to have Congressman Jeff Duncan. He's right behind
Very
you.
Good.
He's been down on the border before, and he knows this. So I'm going to ask him, has he gotten together with President Trump on the issue of having signs down there, having panic buttons, and not for us, for the illegals. This is ridiculous.
Right. And please tell him to put the agents on the border.
on the border, yes. Okay. Well,
we will be
doing this. Peggy, it is always a delight to see you. You brought me a picture, even of a hat that you thought I needed to have. I love that. I love that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And, Fred, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You guys hit it right out of the park because you tell us the straight and skinny of it. And that's why I love having ranchers on. You're not politicians.
No, not very good at that.
I tried once, ran for office, and got beat, so I gave that life up.
Too honest.
Too honest. Thanks so much, guys. You guys are great. Have a good one.
Bye. Thanks for having us.
Does this make sense? We buy your gold, diamonds, jewelry, coins, sterling silver at the highest prices, paying extra for fine jewelry and quality, and we're always buying your diamonds and colored stones, too. But we sell at the lowest prices, from diamonds to gemstone jewelry to sterling silver pieces and antique and estate jewelry. Always lowest prices for quality jewelry. See us today, Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6613.
Hey, I'm live right here from Washington, D.C., and you know our last guests, Fred and Peggy Davis, they just gave Congressman Jeff Duncan a small earful of their problems living on the border. And since you're on Homeland Security, Congressman Jeff Duncan, what do you say?
Yeah, you know, their points are well taken and need to be relayed on to Homeland Security to General Kelly, Secretary Kelly. I know him as General Kelly. He was at Southcom. I dealt with him when I was chair of the Western Hemisphere. But Secretary Kelly needs to know firsthand. They were telling me there are signs on the border that say, don't drive here. This is a drug trafficking corridor.
Yes. There are billboards.
And they're written in Spanish and Chinese. I said, well, why don't you write them in Arabic and Farsi, too, because there's a threat of Islamic terrorists coming across our border.
Yes.
Maybe they need to know not to go there.
Well, I mean, the thing is, and there are panic buttons. If you need water, if you're in bad situation and you're coming into our country, these are not for our citizens. They're for their foreigners to be in there coming in. I mean, what's going on, Jeff?
Well, we have an unsecured border. We've talked about it so many times, Ann, that, you know, the soft underbelly of the nation is our southern border. And this isn't about illegal immigrants that are coming here to take jobs in horticulture or hospitality or whatever. We have a unsecured border. What does that mean? That means any criminal element or any element willing to do nefarious things can come across our border.
Right.
We have to secure our country. We're a sovereign nation. Other countries, that means outside influences can't tell you what to do or not do. Sovereignty means you make your own choices and you determine your own fate. As a sovereign nation, we should secure our border. And we can work on common sense legal immigration issues.
Mm-hmm.
But we have illegal immigration issues that are first solved by securing our border.
Well, it's like they were saying, they are right on the border. They are right on the border, and they go 25 miles before the Border Patrol are there. They're not near the border. They're not a couple of miles or a mile. The Border Patrol are 25 miles.
Well,
back.
I mean, in some areas, that's kind of a yes and no.
Okay. Are you going to give me the football analogy now? Because I've heard that a lot. About the scrimmage line and having them in the backfield, and that's where they got to be.
No, no, you know that really fits my modus operandi. But
yes, I know.
We're securing the border, but they can't put people where you can see the next person. You can't have that many men on the border. We need a border wall. We need more concrete, steel, and barbed wire. We need more electronic surveillance. We need more drones. We need more aerostats. There's a lot of different things that we can do to watch the border.
Are we
going to
get those things or not?
The first thing we want to get is a border wall.
Yeah, but how long is it going to take to build the border wall?
As long as it takes.
But, I mean, I'm for the border wall, but I'm just saying, in the meantime, wouldn't electronic and drones and this type of thing?
And we're still doing a lot of that. That's what people don't know. I mean, I've been down in the Nogales sector and toured the border, and there are areas
you can't put a fence. Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's mountains. It's as high as the Rocky Mountains. But you can run fence all the way to those, and then you create areas where you sort of force multiplier areas where you could put the men and women in our Border Patrol in these areas, these corridors, as you have heard them called, to effectively interdict the drug smugglers, the illegals, human trafficking, whatnot. The border wall will cordon or push those people into those areas where they can be more readily apprehended. Right now we have a wide open border. You know, you go down to the Rio Grande area, that valley, you know, people are coming across every day. There is no physical barrier other than the river. We don't have enough manpower. And even with drones, you know, sometimes it takes the manpower a little while to get there. So, you do have scrimmage line, backfield, you know, free safeties, that sort of thing. But there's multiple layers. What I've said all along is more aerostats looking at the border, flying more drones, and people kind of queasy about drones, but they're effective in flying altitude, watching with forward-looking infrared radar, watching the border in large swaths, so that when they see a group of illegals trying to cross or drug smugglers trying to bring drugs across, they have enough forewarning that they can bring the manpower to bear in an area where they can be apprehended. Now, Barack Obama's administration didn't do a whole lot of apprehension, and when they did, they released them. I think Donald Trump's administration has a whole different mindset of illegal immigration. I think Congress addressing today Kate's laws, sanctuary cities, is showing America that we have a different opinion than the Barack Obama administration with regard to sanctuary cities. What I say is, if you're a sanctuary city, if you're not willing to enforce federal law, this particular federal law, then you shouldn't get any money from the federal government.
Yeah, well, they don't seem to feel that way.
And universities don't either. You know, California, University of California, Berkeley, and University of California system, who Janet Napolitano actually runs, by the way, former Secretary of Homeland Security, is a sanctuary university, based on her declaration. I love those glasses, by the way. She's got on blue glasses, folks. If you're not looking at Facebook Live and see Ann's glasses, they're killer.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome. But so now we've got sanctuary universities. They shouldn't get any federal dollars. They shouldn't get tuition assistance for their students. It ought to be cut off completely. And the federal government has got to get the attention of these sanctuary cities, in my opinion, and sanctuary institutions. They shouldn't get our tax dollars if they're not willing to enforce the law of the federal government.
Well, you're in Congress. We have the Senate. Are we going to make those changes, or are we just going to be sitting here kind of like we are on health care right at this moment?
You know, we're making some changes today on the House side. You know, I would ask you to ask those questions of Lindsey and Tim, Lindsey Graham folks and Tim Scott, our state senator, U.S. senators from South Carolina. Ask them those questions. We're going to vote these things out today. But too often on the Senate side, they want to muddy the water with comprehensive immigration reform. This isn't about immigration reform. We can have that conversation at some point in time.
Sure.
Let's talk about sanctuary cities, federal dollars. Let's talk about enforcing the laws that are on the books. Kate's law, illegal, that was deported, what, seven times, came back, ended up killing a beautiful young lady. Should have never been able to come back in the country. Should have been incarcerated, actually.
So as far as what is happening in Congress, I saw where you have, aren't you part of a bill to...
Just a letter. It's not
letter.
Really a bill.
Oh, a letter.
But, yeah.
Okay.
On the August recess.
Oh, well, on the August recess, that's one. How's that coming along? Are we going to have an... Are you guys... Are we? I know I'm not going to have an August recess. Are you going to have an August recess?
You taking a vacation this year?
No, I said I'm not going to have an August recess. I'm not
I mean, a vacation
have...
in general.
No.
Look, there's a lot of work left to do. If you really start stacking it up because of Democrat obstructionism in the Senate, holding up the nomination confirmations.
We're back. I guess we have gremlins in the system this morning. We're here with Congressman Jeff Duncan. So you were saying that we get obstructionism from the Democrats. I mean, that's normal.
Yeah, I mean, that's caused a lot of things to back up. And what I was saying, we still have Obamacare repealed and replaced. We still have a budget to get done. Once the budget's done, we have comprehensive tax reform, which everyone that I represent seems to want. We have a debt ceiling increase because we've hit the nation's debt ceiling. We've got to deal with that. We've got appropriations bills to fund government before the end of September. There's just a lot of things, Ann, that are stacked up. And if we don't get through some of those must-pass pieces, the debt ceiling, the appropriation bills, then we ought to stay through August and keep working. It's a historical period where members of Congress can go recharge their batteries, but also spend a lot of time in the district. I was talking to the Greenwood Index Journal yesterday, and we were talking about recess. we work 3 weeks in Washington, and we'll take a week back in the district.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Greta Van Susteren used to call it, well, Congress out of town on recess. Well, I was working. You know, if you look at my schedule, we're back in the district. We're doing the things that folks in the district want us to do, trying to learn, you know, how the policies in Washington affect folks back home, what we can do differently. But when they calculate the number of days Congress works, they only look at the days we're voting. Well, you know, this job's much more than going to cast a vote. You know, we're back in the district educating people and educating ourselves, doing that constituent service work.
Sure. So do you think, well, what do you think? Is August going to be a work time? Because there absolutely is no time you're going to get everything done before you leave.
I don't think my leadership has any stomach to cancel August recess, but we're going to keep pushing them.
Isn't that the problem? Leadership is the problem here, isn't it? Isn't leadership a large part of a problem with making people do what should be done? It should be done to be there.
The definition of leadership is lead, somebody that leads.
Yes.
They ought to be the ones saying, folks, if we don't get our work done before August, we're going to stay here.
Well, you know, that's what they do in business, right?
Absolutely.
If you don't get the job done, you'll be here
you
till we
there.
Get it done.
Exactly.
Well, that's right.
You know, I remember when I used to work for my father-in-law in Greenwood, and we worked until the job was done. And you didn't leave the job site until you cleaned the shovels and the wheelbarrows and all that of all the concrete, because if you didn't, the next day, it's all
too
solidified,
late.
And that shovel's worthless at that point. So I went to work for a manufacturing company and the next summer. And at quitting time, those guys left.
Yep.
Wait, we had to clean up the paint that we were using to paint the roof, to, you know, do things like that. We had to put our stuff up, and they didn't. I'd turn around, they'd be gone. I'd stay extra to make sure that everything was prepared for the next day. That's what you do. You stay until the job's done. But
exactly.
This mentality of quitting at quitting time on a job or, you know, leaving based on a schedule is just wrong.
It is wrong.
Well, you were an entrepreneur. And I was. And
yeah.
We realized if we didn't do it,
it didn't get done. That's right. And you only had yourself to blame when you had problems the next day. One more question for you, Representative the Gutshot. Representative
Scalia.
I want to make sure I said the name correct. You were there. You saw the person. How are you recovering, shall we say, from the fact that that man had your name in his pocket?
Well, it's unnerving. The fact that I had interaction with him in the parking lot, and he had my name on a list in his pocket, call it an assassination list, call it whatever. FBI's trying to poo-poo that a little bit. We've reached out to the FBI and said, look, the six people whose names were on his list, we want a briefing from you, what you know. How did you research us? Why our names were on the list? Different than the total baseball team, because he wasn't really targeting our baseball team because we were that good. We got our butts kicked, so it wasn't because of our
that
baseball
That was embarrassing, skills. By the way. I think you guys should have done better for Scully.
Well, we just don't have any pitching. It's what it comes down to. But
not to get off track.
Yeah, I played a great game. But anyway.
Okay.
Woo, woo, woo. So we want to find out, the six of us want to find out, you know, what they know, have a briefing and be able to ask questions. And I think the team in general wants the FBI to brief us on their investigation. Probably the whole House at some point will do that, but the six of us want to have an opportunity to have one-on-one, ask questions. There are a lot of folks that have survivor's guilt. You know,
right.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, we're all praying for Steve Scalise. I've got on my phone, you'll see the fleur-de-lis, or however you say it, the symbol for LSU in Louisiana. I've got one on my lapel. I actually took a tiger paw off my lapel yesterday to put that on.
Oh, my God.
That, you know, that's
saying
a lot.
That says something, yes.
So, you know, just continue to lift Steve up. And he's recovering. He's in a regular room out of ICU now. So, he's coming along better.
Yes.
Matt Micah was shot in the side. Bullet came out as front, had a lot of cracked ribs and had a clipped lung. It missed his heart and missed a lot of the vitals. Thank God he's, the last I heard, he's doing better. You've got others that were wounded in various
capacities. But how are you doing? That's my question. How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing okay.
I mean, this is a personal question. How are you
doing? I'm
doing
okay. You know, it's not a, probably not an hour goes by that I don't think about it.
Yeah, I would think that that would be something that would take a little bit and could affect, you know, what you think going forward in this job.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's reassessing, you know, what we do and don't do for security back in the district up here, and a lot of conversations being had. After Gabby Giffords was shot my third day in office, and you know, right, you were probably
right,
still
yes.
in Washington at that
yes.
point. She'd come up for the inauguration and swearing in and whatnot for Congress in 2011. We did a lot of things differently than maybe Gresham had done, you know, because
right.
we reassessed at that point in time. But you know, I don't want it to interfere with our interaction with my constituents. That's my number one goal. Is, you know, if we pick up our level of security at events, I just don't want it to interfere. I don't think that's what our founders wanted either. So. But we're in a different day here in the 21st century, and so we are evaluating what we do and how we do it.
And you were there with Ambassador Haley
yesterday. Yeah.
Yes.
Had an opportunity to introduce her and got a plug in for the national champion Clemson Tigers there. Got a big laugh out of the room, and I told him I was shameless. But she did a fabulous job. I mean, the Democrats were pretty hard on her. And she just continued to give it, not give it back to him in a rough way, but she held her ground, and she articulated hers and the administration's position with regard to the UN. And I asked her a question about foreign aid and people that vote with us or don't vote with us at the UN and how much foreign aid they get. So we're going to work on that together. I thought she knocked it out of the park, just like she has done since she's been nominated.
Absolutely. Well, I know you've got to go. I always appreciate, though, having these few minutes where we can sit down and talk. And if you do come home for August recess, maybe you can come see me in my new studio.
You count on it. I'll make it happen. I know we've had some scheduling difficulties in the past, but we're not going to have that anymore. And I would love to come and sit down in the studio because I love Ann, and I love coming in the studio. And WCRS and Greenwood, I mean, yeah, you guys are it, so...
Well, thanks for coming out here today. I know we took you away from your schedule at work, but we really appreciate you stopping by.
Well, we're going to go speak on Kate's Law on the floor today
and
on the rule on that. So we're working on sanctuary cities, working on enforcing the law. You know, 2 years ago today, or this weekend rather, was when Kate was killed in San Francisco by an illegal alien.
Oh, my God, that's
we're going
right.
to be on that today, 2 years ago. So it's monumental, or at least momentous, that we're doing it this weekend. And remember, folks, y'all have a great July 4th weekend. It's not just a holiday. It's where we recognize the birth of our nation, the independence, where we told the King of England, no more. You know, you're not going to overtax us. You're not going to oppress us. We're going to declare our independence, and we have what we have today, the greatest country on earth, because of what happened July 4th in 1776.
God bless us all,
God
each
bless
and
America
everyone.
Too. Amen.
Yep. Absolutely. Hey, let's take a quick break. I'm going to get teed up for my next guest. Thanks so much, Congressman Jeff Duncan.
Thank you, Ann.
Hi there, Jim Bohannon here on 1450 AM WCRS, the voice of Greenwood. You can hear me every evening, weeknights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. with the Jim Bohannon Show of interviews and calls. And then you can go to bed with me and wake up with me as well with America in the Morning the following morning, 6 till 7 a.m. Of course, don't forget Ann Eller's many contributions to WCRS, 8 to 10 a.m. with the I Love Ann Show, 4 to 6 p.m. with Meet Me at the Diner and the Happy Hour with Ann. All on the Voice of Greenwood.
Oh, that's right. We are right here at WCRS. Yes, live from Washington, D.C. Most interesting, got to talk to Congressman Jeff Duncan this morning. And, of course, we have been talking to ranchers and gang-related things. And I tell you what, now we're going to talk to somebody who just believes that one thing is important. And you know what? So do I. Speaking English. English is America's language. And my guest today is Dan Carter. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Now, actually, you are pro-English is what I should say,
that's
I guess.
Right. That's right. That's the name of the organization. And it's interesting, your congressman was here just a few months ago, has signed on to H.R. 997, the English Language Unity Act of 2017. He's one of the co-sponsors.
So well, how about that?
We're very excited about that.
Well, you know, I think English, it doesn't make sense to me why we can't speak English and why it isn't our official language.
We say, and I go to members of Congress, it's really interesting, senators, members of the House, and they'll say, oh, it's not our official language. Sometimes they'll say that, and I sort of scratch my head. I'm going, well, okay. The majority whip, who, by the way, had that serious accident a few weeks ago, he's doing better, by the way. He received the award we're going to talk about in just a second, and he's a co-signer. Steve
Scalise.
Scalise is our one of our big backers on this. And, in fact, would you read what's on the back of a key ring I just gave you?
Well, let me see if I can get the light. We have but one flag. We must also learn one language, and that language is English. Oh, my God, and who said that? President Theodore Roosevelt.
Well, there you go. And we give...
How long ago was that?
Well, it was it was back at the turn of the last century. Teddy Roosevelt said this, and we give an award out, the American Unity Award, and our majority whip received that back in December. I gave it to him in the Capitol, in the Lincoln Room. And this award we think is very significant because each Congress, we pick one member of Congress, the House or the Senate, and certainly the whip does that. We think there are two reasons.
Yes.
We should have there are probably a lot of reasons, but
sure.
There's two. One is assimilation. I worked for President Bush and Bush II. I worked for Elaine Chao. And Elaine Chao used to say, you know, I came here as an 8 or 9 year old girl from Taiwan. We were in San Francisco in our apartment. My dad would come in and say, girls, now speak English. This is good. It'll help you economically, help your family, your
right.
own children. And she would get tears. And, of course, I know politicians have stump speeches, but she was a very genuine person. And, of course, she's now Secretary of Transportation. And she'd say, look, I'm Secretary of Labor of the greatest country in the world. That wouldn't have happened if I didn't know English. Our very own chairwoman on the second page of the another newsletter I gave you, Rosalie Porter, it says My Life in Three Languages. And she has pretty much, from Italy, though, she has pretty much a similar story how she succeeded. And she's a education expert.
Well, I think it's great that people know other languages.
Absolutely.
You know, because it enriches and it makes
right.
them more able to understand. On the flip side, if you understand the nuances and understand English, then you are able to communicate
right.
with us in our country. And I find it really offensive when I get letters from Congress or on something that I need to answer, that it lists out over 100 languages that I could get this paper in,
yeah.
like Farsi.
Well, the matter of fact, it's interesting you said that particular item. We look at the two bills in Congress, H.R. 997 and Senate 678.
This is WCRS right
yeah.
here in Greenwood. There you go.
Okay. And those bills were tracking its official language bill. Matt, last night, two from Georgia's joined on, and that makes us have 50 sponsors, co-sponsors, plus Steve King from Iowa. So that's
mm-hmm.
51.
Right.
And then we have six in the Senate right now from Senator Inhofe. But we also are tracking other things. And one of the things we're tracking is the issue of EO 13166, which is Executive Order 13166. Bill Clinton signed it in the last months of his administration. And you're talking about the Farsi and some other languages.
Right.
They're literally over 300 languages. And that bill said a number of things. But one of the things was if you reach threshold of 5% at a voting booth, where Brennan and I, my wife and I, vote in Fredericksburg, then you have to provide translation materials. Interesting enough, 2014, the nice people of Orange County, California, had to pay over $330,000 to do that very thing. It just seems to me, the logic here is...
The cost factor.
So you have money.
Right.
And we know that the GAO said several years ago it was between $2 and $3 billion a year. I don't know.
Well, here's another one that I find very interesting. I don't speak English, but I want to become a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
The office where you have to take your test
right.
to become a U.S. citizen,
right.
they will provide you with a translator.
It defies description. I have also in front of you material that says statehood bid requires official English status. And this is dealing with the fact that we're tracking, I told you we're tracking three or four things, but they're all dealing with official English. Puerto Rico, the backers of making it a state, held a plebiscite at the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rigged plebiscite, if you read the article. And they didn't give the option for Commonwealth, which they have now. They have a really pretty good situation. They have a $74 billion debt they want us to bail out, but they would get...
We must be talking about Puerto Rico.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay,
yeah, okay.
I didn't hear Puerto Rico.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering,
and
yeah.
so they would have get five congressmen and two senators, and there's nothing in their legislation saying you speak English. So you theoretically could have your congressmen was here, the senators in the Senate or the House, you could have Spanish being spoken there. Nothing wrong with that, but if it was on our floor, that is the problem. When I go into a member of the House, you saw the Again, Steve King a minute ago, the author of this bill, the sponsor, And I'll go into someone's office, I'll say, now, who's your boss? What committee are they on? They say Ways and Means, or they'll say whatever it is. And I'll say, well, the official business of the country is in English. Doesn't mean my church in Fredericksburg, Virginia, has an outreach to Hispanics.
There is a difference. If a business wants to have Spanish and English and whatever language is popular there, I think that's fine. But the language of our country and one to be a citizen should have to be able to. Nobody wants anybody to lose their language.
Well, and that's what Secretary Chow used to say. Her dad says, don't forget your heritage. And she didn't.
Right.
And same thing with Rosalie Porter, our chairwoman of our organization. So it's not saying turn your back on your heritage. Matter of fact, also, most Americans feel this way. A few years ago, Rasmussen poll, about 5 years ago, did a poll, and 84% of the American people want to have an official language, and they want that language to be English. Wait, it crosses gender, ethnic groups, political ideology, and that, I mean, everything you can imagine, education levels. Karl Rove, who used to work for President Bush as well, he said anything that tracks over 70%, you ought to look at it. Well, see, 84 is bigger than 70. I'm a history guy, but I think that's 84 is bigger.
That's true.
And so it means in your area where you live, where I live in Fredericksburg, Virginia, it means 84% of the people, even say knocked off a little bit, 80%. That's a big number of people want to have English as the official language. And we have a good number, a good base. Last Congress, the 114th, we had 91. We need to have more sign on. By the way,
people need to tell their Congress on our website,
proenglish.org. I can't say that enough, proenglish.org. But last night we gained 2, as I mentioned, and so we have 50 plus 1. Mm-hmm. We have 51, counting Steve King. We have a large number of people who are contemplating making floor remarks, and on and we go. So these are really positive steps, I was going to say a minute ago, President Obama said, well, I don't care if this bill passes. He says, I'm not going to sign it. So we knew where he stood. Okay. Interesting, President Trump has a different inclination, and even more interesting, I find, is Vice President Pence, when he was a congressman, mm-hmm. how many times did he sign this legislation? 5 different congresses he supported H.R. 997 of Steve King. So we have a friend in the White House, and we're excited about that. We just need to encourage, go to proenglish.org, and it tells you how to contact your congressman.
Well, I think, and even when you talk about immigration, it's important. I mean, look at how, you know, if you are arrested by a sheriff's office and everything, should English be the, or should we have to go get somebody who understands, who can speak the language? I mean, these are things that are big costs.
They're big costs, and it also almost gives you a headache thinking about it. This is just not logical. I mean, I deal with Congress every day, and I sometimes walk away going, wait, did I just have a conversation with someone? And the pure logic just doesn't make sense. We have real issues in this country, real problems. This should not even be something we're talking about. We should not be saying we need to have English as our official language. It should be done.
Well, it should have been done
a long time ago.
Exactly.
And people like your congressman that was in here just a moment ago, and Steve King and others who are really pushing this, they won't give up. They are determined, and we just need to encourage them to sign on as a co-sponsor.
Yeah, I was looking over your myths about official English.
Right.
Myth: at the Constitutional Convention, the Founding Fathers debated and decided against making English the official language. Fact: the Founding Fathers did not enact English as the official language because they didn't need to.
My other part of my life is I'm an adjunct history instructor in college. Been doing it about 29 years. And I make it a point to bring these things up. I'll say, you know, here's this is we have a bond, we have a thread. Canada has a problem. It's a divisive issue, French and English in Canada.
It's been a problem, and it's
a very divisive issue. If you go there, you'll see the signs. There's a cost problem, but it's divisive for their people. We, as the little keyring says, we have one flag, we have one language. That language is English. That's a bond. That can be a bonding instrument.
Sure. Exactly. And then the other thing, most immigrants oppose official English legislation. You brought this up. It says 91% of foreign-bound Latino immigrants agree that learning English is essential to succeed in the U.S., and more than two-thirds of Hispanics favor making English the official language.
Absolutely. In fact, someone I was on someone's program yesterday here at Holder Freedom's Fire, and they said, you know, Isn't it really like putting, if you say you don't need to know English, you're putting you in a corner, you're going to be like a caste system. And I love that. It is. You're saying, look, Dan, you and Brenda, you'll stay over here. Don't worry about learning English. And so I have a lower paying job, perhaps. My children have, you know, less opportunities. And a compassionate conservatism says we want you to be inclusive.
Right, exactly. So those are the things that you're about. The website is proenglish.org.
Proenglish.org. And you can find information about the things you and I have talked about today, how to contacting congressmen. Two of my children interned in on Capitol Hill and one at the White House, but they learn more on interning. People call, they take notes, who's called and called about what. They
right.
respond, they want to get reelected.
Right.
It's a good gig, as someone told me. It's a good gig. They want to keep them coming back. And if they, all of a sudden, at the end of the day, the chief of staff looks at it and says, oh, my goodness, 82 people said we need to sign up to official English. So H.R. 997, and then yet again, Senate 678. We really, really need people signing up.
All right. If you want pro-English, if you want English to be the official language, you need to check this one out, folks. Dan Carter, thanks so much for being with us here today.
Thanks for having us here.
Absolutely. That is going to do it for Dan. Thank you so much, Dan. We are going to finish up here. I need to get his picture before he walks out the door. So this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We are going to be back at 4 this afternoon. I sure hope you all have a great day. And make sure you check out our Facebook page, WCRS.AM Radio. Check that out. There's going to be lots of good content there. That'll do it for me. Bye-bye, everybody.